Session number 13573, Rule 4.
So, the British Army is approaching. You're marching eastwards.
That's right.
You're turning round.
Marching westwards. And this carried on more or less in that pattern for about 6 weeks.
As long as that?
Yeah. But we, although we'd only been issued with one loaf of bread and half a pound of butter, margarine, they issued no more food. We lived better than we'd lived all through our time as POWs, because we marched from one barn to another, one farm to another, and each farm we descended upon, all the little pigs and all the little chickens all got slaughtered and roasted up on fires. And we even fed the guards as well.
Oh, the guards are with you?
Oh, yes, some are walking with us. They were so old, we had to carry their packs and their rifles, because they were sort of home guard types, you know, that Hitler would call up to supplement his troops. And we were shooting rabbits whenever we could, any sort of game. And
what were the guards' rifles?
Yeah. And I suppose we were worse than vandals, really. We must have terrified the countryside. That's all, the only thing I can think now. But we'd go into these farming communities. They always seemed to me as if there were a few houses and a few farms, you know, all in one small village or something, one small community. And all the inhabitants would disappear into their houses and lock themselves in, while we helped ourselves to whatever livestock was about. We didn't feel that we owed them anything. We thought they owed us something, so we fed ourselves. And but I don't think I don't think any of them were vicious towards local people or the guards. At the end, right at the end, the guards just... We just said to the guards, well, you're our prisoners now. And and they were quite happy to stay with us until things were sorted out. We personally, I and four friends some German troops came up to us in a canvas-covered lorry. They said, we want to give ourselves up. Where is the nearest cage? Well, we didn't know where any cages were or where the British Army were taking prisoners. The British Army hadn't even reached us then. And we said, well, if you follow that road down there, you'll come to it. But you won't be able to take your lorry because you can't get it down there. Oh, they said, enough, they said. And we jumped up into the lorry and drove off in the lorry, which was which had schnapps, bread, even a ham in there, I think. So which they were hoping to sustain themselves, I suppose. We we set off westwards in that until we were eventually stopped by British troops and said, you can't go any further, there's a battle going on or something. So we disembarked and a little while later we came across a German jeep which was upended in a ditch, but apart from that it was quite serviceable. So we rode off in that.
You still went and moved away from the fighting area? Though.
That's right, we carried on westwards and eventually we got to Lunenburg Heath, and now we're receiving ex-POWs there and re-kitting them out and flying them home. And, that's where I came back from. About May the 8th, May the 9th,
well,
I think.
The war ended. The war was declared on the 8th of May.
Peace was the 8th of May, yeah.
On the Thursday, was it?
Yeah, well, I was...
You came home on the Saturday.
Yeah. Well, our war had ended slightly before that, but I was...
What were your feelings at that time? I know it's a silly question, but they're often unpredictable.
It isn't a silly question, because I... bemused, I think is the word, because I didn't know. It was something that I didn't expect to see, quite honestly, for a long, long time. Did towards the end, you know, but... I didn't think I should ever be back there. So many things could have gone wrong. But I was just happy, I suppose, happy.
From Lüneburg, you were flown home or come back?
Flown back to somewhere outside of London, I think it was. I forget where it was. Where we were received with, in style, each one of us escorted off the plane by a whack or a RAF and taken into this hangar where we were immediately deloused. That was the first thing. Then a good meal. Then a medical exam to see if you were fit. And then given a bunch of £5 notes and sent home until demob time. Had the choice of staying in or being demobbed. My wife didn't want to marry a regular, did you?
Well, I had very strong reasons about that.
Can I... I'll get the microphone on you, because we can't hear you properly over there. Anyhow, you weren't married at that time?
No. No, we were engaged to be married, but we hadn't got round to getting married before I was shot down. But I was given the choice, and I was given the choice of a commission as well in the RAF regiment. But they hadn't dropped the atom bomb then, so I wasn't too certain about it. And Peg didn't want to marry a soldier or an airman or a sailor, so...
No, it wasn't that at all.
What was it then?
I told you the reason.
What was it then?
The reason was you'd been stuck over there for 4 years.
Yeah.
And you'd been lucky enough to be alive, right?
Well, anyway...
I'm awfully sorry. Can I get you... Yeah. We can hardly hear you, you see.
Anyway...
I'll put the microphone on you in a minute, because I want to get your side of the story.
Anyway, you weren't keen on me staying in the RAF, so I came out of it. And that was it. And I was demobbed in... I was given leave until September, wasn't I? September 1945, that's right. And in that time we were married and demobbed and all sorts, weren't we? Yeah.
Looking back over the years, what do you think that experience has done to you? Has it improved you? Has it caused a certain amount of irreparable damage to your life? What do you think?
I think it's
damaged it to the extent that nothing is really important now. You see, I came back to work for Cadbury's selling chocolate in the end. Well, to me, the importance, which was important, I mean, it made my living and it made their living, made the manufacturer's living. But I couldn't attach any real importance to selling a block of chocolate to somebody. There were far more things important than that. Far more important.
We shall have to write to the War Office then, shan't we, and demand compensation.
Well, people weren't surviving. They're still now. We've still got it today, haven't we?
You couldn't find anything of importance to do. I mean, with Cadbury's was such a sort of letdown. There weren't any more challenging jobs that you wanted to do.
What we did was go into business ourselves, wasn't it? Just that was for the reason, the purpose of making a living. We've been retired since we were 60 and a half. But since then, I've worked in the law courts in Swindon. I still work in there. That's why I had to put you off this morning, because they rang up and asked me to go, because I'm being so old. I only go when they need me to go. But I feel that doing that, which is a social service, is better than anything I've ever done since the war. And I enjoy it more. And I don't mind to give it up, even though I'm keeping it.
Mrs. Jones, when did you first meet your husband to be? Can you go back?
Oh, yes, 1935.
Thirty-six. When he joined up, what were your feelings then? Because you were still very young then, weren't you?
Well, I remember him saying when we were at his mother's this one night that war was imminent, really. That he didn't fancy the army, he didn't fancy the navy, but he was going to go and try and get in the aircrew flying. When nobody said anything, it was his choice, wasn't it? I don't think I had feelings then. I was young. What was I, 20, 21? I think I just sort of more or less accepted it. It's when you get into the 70s that you don't accept these things so much.
And you wrote to him a lot, did you? Or?
When he was a prisoner of war?
Well, no, when he was...
Not an awful lot, no, because he was home so often, weren't you? You used to get a lot of leave. Pretty well of leave. Most... No, I don't think I did write, did I, when you were two taken prisoner? No, I don't think I did.
Tell me the time, though, when you were shot down and how you heard about it.
I used to call it his mother's every day on my way home from work. I used to call it. And on the day that, the night that he'd been taken prisoner. I'd been to get some dresses made, and where his mother lived, there was a bay window and you could see two roads. And I'd called him there and I said, oh, I said, here's Bert coming home. We thought he was, Bert was coming home. And I thought there was a deadly silence. She didn't say anything. Of course, when we looked, it wasn't him, it was someone else. I called in, nothing was said, I called in on the Wednesday, and your dad had the telegram, hadn't he? And it went a whole day before they told me, about him. Anyway, they just had the telegram to say that he was missing. And... I tell you, I went home, and a week after that is when Lord Haw-Haw gave his name out. And then we heard from the ministry the next day.
What about one of the girls in the...
Jerry Burbage had just been married, hadn't he? And his wife was on the camp, and she'd gone into the ops room, hadn't she? About 12 o'clock at night, I think it was. She'd gone into the ops room. And she heard this announcement to say that they were going to bail out. They'd been shot down or something. And she wrote to us all. And that was the first inclination we got that we thought that they were alive. And a few days after, we heard from MacFadden, who was his commanding officer. And then we heard from the government to say that he was prisoner of war. But we'd already had... sort of got an idea that that's where he might be from the information from the camp, from Shadyshaw, from Mrs. Burbage, which I thought was rather nice.
Which was what exactly? Can you tell me what the information was?
I can't remember offhand. They'd been shot down and they were going to bail out. Is that what it was? They'd been shot down and they were going to bail out. They were just about to bail out. And that was more or less the actual wording of what he'd said. So we...
Over the radio.
The message was... Well, all I know was that she said that she'd had a message from the wireless operator, which was Bert, and they'd been shot down, and they were bailing out. They were just about getting to bail out. So, I mean, we was lucky to get that through, which was quite a relief to us, really, because we got an idea that he was alive, they were all alive.
And how soon did you hear from him by mail, by letter?
Quite some time. I can't remember how long. Quite some time, wasn't it? I think if I remember rightly, we had one card. I'm safe and well, was it? Mm-hmm. I'm safe and well. Something like that. That was the first one we had from him. I'm safe and well. I think that was the first one we had from you. But it was quite a while, quite some time. And then so Lord Haw-Haw gave it out, so we knew then that he was alive. I didn't know about any of the others.
And you wrote to him a lot, presumably?
Did you? Oh yes, I wrote every night.
So many incidents keep coming back to mind.
Yes. every night.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
He can't hear you.
Referring to the one letter a day that Peg wrote, the incident of the Dieppe raid, the Canadians took some Germans prisoners there and they tied them up on the beach. This upset German high command. So as a reprisal, they came to our camp, one of the camps, and we were handcuffed all day long, supposedly. For some reason, mail stopped coming through as well. I don't know if that was a result of the same incident or not. But for quite some time, we received no mail from home. And then the ban was suddenly lifted, and all this mail came in all at once. So we were sat there with about 3 months' mail, and a letter a day for 3 months is quite a few. And so I spent a few days with them was sorting it in chronological order and reading through. So that helped to pass some of the time. But that's all I want to say on that, I think.
Did you start getting some meaningful letters through after a while?
Yes, but there was nothing... the main thing was just to say that he was alive, you know. It was sort of more or less personal stuff, you know. It wasn't... he couldn't say much about himself because he used to rip it all out with pencil if he wanted to tell any news. It was more or less how he was and how I was and how the family were in it. There was nothing much... There's no news in it, really, was there? Not news of any sort. But, I mean, it was just good enough to get a letter on you still alive, you know, by just getting the letter.
That was presumably put as much news as you possibly could in your letters.
Well, I used to write a lot of trap as well, I suppose, but I didn't know what I did write, really. It was more or less, must have been the same thing over and over and over again. But I thought, well, if there's a letter there for him to open... That's the main thing. His mother used to write 1 week. His dad used to write another week. Your brothers used to write, hadn't they, every so often. I think his mother put an awful lot of news, and I don't know whether it ever reached him.
We're all blackmailed, aren't we?
all blacked out what Mother wrote, you see, but you couldn't say anything to her. I mean, she was older, she didn't understand, you know.
Anything they suspected of.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Cameras were very good to him when he was a prisoner of war. They sent you photographs, didn't they? Took photographs of us. They used to knit for you, whether it be in khaki or not, and send them. They were very, very supportive, Cadbury's. They were very kind through the war years, weren't they? Mm. Really were.
All through the Red Cross, I
suppose. I don't know. I don't know how you used to get it. I know we used to have one man called Mr. Edmondson, who... Bert used to play football and cricket a lot at Cadbury's, and he used to come regular, didn't he?
He used to go to relatives and they would send
cheer us up a bit, you know, and send him, have our photographs taken and send of the family and send to him, you know, and all this business, which I thought was quite nice.
And the photographs arrived?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, well, yes, you brought a lot of them back. Mm.
When you first met him after his release, how did you find him?
Exactly the same. No different. He got to Lunenburg Heath, and the last 3 or 4 months when we thought the war was going to be over, I used to sit up at home listening to the late news. Very late it was. And we used to find out what camp he was in, because he was moved an awful lot. And then they'd tell us on the radio that they'd released all these prisoners for this camp. They'd moved him. And this is how it went on for about 3 or 4 months. Each time we were expecting him home, we got a letter he'd been moved. You sort of tried to keep track of where they were going. On the Friday, the day after war ended, he was allowed a telegram, and he sent the telegram to me to say he was home when he'd be home. And I was out at work, so somebody in the family, I forget who it was, took it up to Bert's house, and Bert's mother decided to bring it up to where I worked, hospital, on the Friday morning, and she brought Mickey with her, the dog. Brought the telegram to give to me, and Mickey the dog saw me come charging right up the wards. He was going to get home on the Friday evening. So my boss said to me, "You're not going to do any more work today, you better go home." This was about 11 o'clock in the morning. And I went home and dolled myself all up, and we sat up all night at his mum's. All night long we sat up. He never came. So I went home on the Saturday morning, and I was just going to get my lunch, and the knock at the door, and it was younger brother. He says, "Bert's home." Of course, I charged up there, and it was just like as if he'd never been away. Didn't make one bit of difference. All those years he was no different, except he was much thinner. Didn't make one bit of difference. He was just the same. And I was just the same, because I'd never bothered with anybody else.
Yeah, excuse me talking about you, your wife, at the moment, but your observations are interesting now. I mean, did you observe any sort of nervousness or...?
No, not a bit. Maybe it's because he's a placid type of chap. I mean, I'm the nervy one. No, didn't make... There was no difference in him whatsoever. Not a bit of difference. Really, I mean, I don't know why they make such a fuss of these men that come home from the Falklands War. I mean, what about our lads that were there in the prison war camps 4 or 5 years? They had to come back and get back into society without any help, didn't they? They had no help. Uh,
He came home. We were married. We got married 6 weeks after when he came home. And on the morning that we got married, the telegraph boy came. We didn't know this until after. The telegraph boy brought a message to his mum. And she opened it and she said, oh, I'm not going to give it him. Would he go back to be demobbed? If he wanted to be demobbed, he was to report, where was it? Cardington. Cosford. On Tuesday. And she said, well, I'm not going to give him this. Because we'd already decided that I didn't want him to stay in. So we got it in the hotel. We went to Blackpool for our honeymoon and we got it in the hotel on the Tuesday. So we phoned up to the camp, didn't you? We'd got to go. And they said, oh, if you want to be demobbed, you've got to come away now. So he'd been away for nearly 4 years. He'd been home 6 weeks. We'd got married and they'd sent for him to go to be demobbed. We were on our honeymoon and he was away for a weekend. He was away for a weekend, and I can always remember, I sat on the sands on this Monday morning, and I happened to look up, and I saw this fella, and it was him all in his civvies with his with his trilby hat on. You know, so that was something else that was unusual. But I'm going to tell you, before I end this little talk, why I objected to him not staying in the RAF. In the first place, my father was an army man. And he wasn't a family man, to be quite honest. I mean, we didn't see him much before 9 or 10 every night. He came home from work and went into his club. But the main reason was, the Japanese war wasn't over. And God had been good to him and he'd come back alive. And I had terrible visions of him going back and getting killed. Had I have known that the Japanese war was going to be over so soon, I wouldn't have had any worry about him staying in. That's the only reason. It wasn't anything else. That was the only reason. I got a terrible telling off my father because my father was a warrant officer. And he said to me, you've got it all wrong, girl. He said, you're this and that and that. And I said, well, I said, he's got a choice. I said, if he wants to go in, that's it. And that is the reason. And that is the only reason. I didn't want him to go back and may have been killed. But of course, as it happened, he wouldn't have done. But we didn't know, did we?
No.